I'm in the back. Okay. All right. Well, it is a hard act following Jerry and then also being the last speaker before lunch, but I'll try to go through the slides in a reasonable time here. Okay. I'd also like to just point out this is joint work with some of my colleagues at Duke, and just point out that they did all the hard work in terms of coming up with the models that I had the problem of trying to combine. So, okay. To motivate what I'm going to do, I'm going to put this in the context of a particular example. We're interested in trying to predict short-term versus long-term survival of women with ovarian cancer and use as predictors, again, characteristics of the tumor. Okay. And so this can be based on using gene expression data to come up with kind of molecular phenotypes of the tumors. What we have is a retrospective sample of survivors of advanced stage ovarian cancer. Small sample, as in a number of gene expression studies where we have only 30 short-term survivors and then 20 long-term survivors. We actually have another set of 11 cases that we're going to use for really for out-of-sample validation. Get microarray, we have over 20,000 genes there, so very high dimensional predictor space. There also are six clinical variables that, again, we also want to be able to combine. Right, so in terms of the models that we're going to look at, there really are three classes of models that we're going to focus on. And in these, we have what are what I call clinical trees. These are going to be prospective models for classification using classification regression trees using only the clinical variables. Okay, and so these are variables such as the age and other characteristics of the tumor or treatment. Okay, we can have other models that we'll denote as expression trees. So these are going to be, again, as kind of prospectively developed models using only the expression data. And then the third class of models are going to be retrospective models. So these are developing linear discriminant models using the gene expression data conditional on the survival variable. Okay. And all of these are going to involve some aspect of feature selection to reduce the number of genes that are going to go into each of these classes of models. Okay. So there are lots of issues of model choice here. So we have what you might view as just the choice of the structural model. That is, so the prospective models are going to be modeling survival conditional on, say, gene expression or clinical variables. The retrospective models are actually the way the study was designed because it's a retrospective sample, and so that would involve modeling all of the gene expression data conditional on the survival data. Okay. All right, so we have that type of structural model, and what we'll see from the kind of traditional Bayesian model averaging, these two forms of models are really not compatible and cannot be combined from the usual form of Bayesian model averaging. Okay. All right, there's and then also the issue of selection of genes. So this enters as a kind of choice of variables or splits that would go into the tree models. In the discriminant models, this would enter in terms of the covariance structure, okay? So in terms of the multivariate normals that are being used there. Okay? So there are many, many potential models that we could look at. Again, it's another nice illustration of the kind of large piece, small n, and this leads to many, many models that could be compatible with the observed data. Usual kind of traditional statistical approach of selecting a single model, of course, ignores model uncertainty. So there are lots of ways that have been proposed for combining models. Okay, and there's been a lot of results that show that inferences really based on combining models can lead to improved predictions or improved performance over just using any single model. Okay, so for example, stacking, bagging, and boosting that Jerry talked about earlier, and also Bayesian model averaging. So from my viewpoint, again, a Bayesian approach allows you to take into account uncertainty about the parameters, uncertainty about the models, and so in principle, we could use decision theory to come up with, say, optimal point estimates, but if we would like to talk about any other aspects of uncertainty, like the question that Hugh raised yesterday, we could, in principle, address that with the Bayesian approach. All right, so the setup, what we're going to do is entertain a collection of models. Okay, so M will be a kind of our model space. Each of these models is going to correspond to a parametric, although it may be very high dimensional, distribution for the data. Okay, so we can express the distribution conditional on some sort of parameters data. All right, so from a Bayesian approach, what we would do is We can start off with a prior for all the parameters under each of these models. Combining that prior with the data and then, you know, turning the usual Bayesian crank, we'll end up with a posterior distribution for the parameters conditional on the data and each of the models. Okay. And so now, if we're interested in making any inference about future data, we could construct a predictive distribution under each of these models. Okay, and that's just going to involve the integral in here. So that gives us a predictive distribution for future observations conditional on each of the models in our observed data. Okay, so the question is, if we have this whole collection of possible predictive distributions, how are we going to combine them in some way? Well, how we actually combine them will depend on the type of model space that we have constructed. So in the context really of model selection, Bernardo and Smith, in their book, I think it's, forget which year it is now, but the book and the sequence of papers have really described kind of three perspectives on how one might view the model space. Okay, so the first of these is the M-closed, the M-complete, and the M-open. Okay. And particularly in the context of model selection, they lead to very different solutions of how we would select a model, and we'll see in the problem of combining models, they also lead to different solutions. Okay. So the M-closed perspective is the one where we believe that one of the models in our list could have generated the data. Okay. So this could be the data generating model. Okay. So that the true model is on our list. Okay. Of course, it's unknown. And so from the Bayesian perspective, what we would try to do is to express our uncertainty about the truth of each of these models by using a prior distribution. That could be a subjective prior distribution, or as a practical Bayesian, it might be an objective prior distribution. All right, so then given the observed data, we can take this prior distribution, and given the data, now we can construct a posterior probability that each of these models in the list could have been the generating model. Okay, so the posterior model probability in this context represents a posterior measure that model M, say MI, generated the data. Okay. And so now if we look at what the predictive distributions are under this M-closed framework, well, just the standard kind of conditional distribution theory would say that the predictive distribution for any future observation is going to be this weighted average of the predictive distributions under all of the individual models, and the weights naturally come out as the posterior model probabilities. So there's no optimization here. This is just what Bayes' theorem tells us what the weights have to be. Okay. And so these weights can be calculated in principle as, again, being proportional to the prior probabilities and then the marginal likelihood of the data. Often in practice, we can't calculate those integrals in closed form down here. And so we will use BIC or DIC or one of the Star Wars ICs I thought that was a joke. Okay. Anyway, we'll use one of the star ICs to kind of to approximate these marginal likelihoods, or we might use Gibbs sampling or markup chain Monte Carlo or reversible jump algorithms to try to, again, in principle, estimate these model probabilities. Okay. But for fairly nice problems, we can calculate these probabilities in closed form. Okay. So tree models, regression models, certain graphical models. Okay. All right. So now if we want to consider the problem, say, of estimation of prediction, that then we can view as a decision theory problem. Okay. So we might have a particular utility function. For example, we might want to use a squared error loss. So our utility would be a minus of the loss function. And so our goal is to, again, find the optimal action given the unknown state y. Okay. So this is going to be our future prediction that we might be interested in. All right, so again, taking a Bayesian perspective, the optimal solution would be to find the action that's going to maximize our expected posterior utility given the observed data. Okay. All right, and so for squared error loss, what we're going to do is just find the action that will maximize this expectation. And now this expectation is taken with respect to the predictive distribution of the unknown data, the future data Y star, conditional on our observed data. So under the M-closed perspective, we know what that predictive distribution is. and it's straightforward to find that that optimal action is going to be the posterior predictive mean conditional on the observed data. And so that expectation is going to be just the weighted average of the posterior means under each of the individual models, where the weights will be the posterior model probabilities. Okay. Now, if our goal is actually to select a single model, okay, the optimal Bayes solution so would be then to find the individual model that is going to be closest to the prediction under Bayesian model averaging. And I guess what I'd like to point out is that that model is not usually the highest posterior probability model. Okay? And so if we're using BIC to try to approximate posterior model probabilities, while BIC might be optimal for finding the, quote, best model in terms of its posterior probability, the most likely model, it often does not lead to the model that's best for prediction. And so the model that's closest to model averaging often has more terms in it. And so in practice, that's maybe why people find that AIC does better for prediction than BIC. Okay. So we, and often it's somewhere really in between there. Okay, so that was what happened if the true model actually is in the list of models that we were interested in. In the M-closed perspective, okay, so we know that the true model is in our model list. Alternative view is that the model, the true model that's generated the data, is not in the list of models. Okay, and so there are two formulations of that problem. So the M-complete formulation says that we know what the true model is. Okay, it might be very complicated, but we can at least in principle say what it is. But we know that it's not in our list of models. Okay, that might be because it's something that's very horribly complicated in terms of partial differential equations. We could specify it, but we just don't want to use it for any sort of computing purposes. And so we have these simpler proxy models, and we'd like to use those in practice. Okay, so there's still the idea of how would we combine those models. The M-open problem is probably the more realistic, and that says that again, we know that all the models that we're looking at are really some sort of just proxy, or the things have been chosen because, again, they're easy to work with, but that the true model is not in our list of models. Okay? And, again, there's a number of reasons we may not have the scientific basis for trying to describe that the model. We lack the time, we lack the expertise. Okay? But the true model is outside of our list of models. Okay. All right, so from these viewpoints, it doesn't make sense to assign prior probabilities to the models in our model space M. Okay? If we really believe that there is this generating model that's not in that list, that would imply that all the models in our model space should get prior probability zero. Okay? So updating these prior probabilities through Bayes' theorem, while you can in principle do it, the posterior probability models really are not going to be applicable for combining models. However, we could still take a decision theoretic approach to try to choose weights to combine the predictions. Okay? And so this is in line really with what Jerry was talking about this morning. Okay. All right. And so in case you haven't been convinced that model averaging is not going to work in this case, a very simple example, if we have just two models in M, M1 and M2, one model could be based on just kind of base learner of just using X1. Second model is just going to use X2. And our true generating model had both X1 and X2 in it. Okay. So just to simplify things, if we standardize all the X's, and if the coefficient in model 1 is bigger than the coefficient in model 2 in terms of absolute values, then it's pretty trivial. You can show asymptotically that the posterior model probability for model 1 will go to 1. What it's doing is going to the model that's closest to the true model. So there's no hope in terms of getting a good combination of models using Bayesian model averaging in this case. And you could say, well, this was a stupid choice of the model space or model list, and we should have put the model that had both of these variables into our, allow that to be in our model space. But when you get into other more complicated types of learners, you just can't necessarily look at all the possible combinations. Okay, so if we think about combining models as a decision problem, now our action is going to be to try to choose the weights that will maximize our expected utility. Okay, and so now this is going to be our goal, is to try to find these weights. Okay, and from a Bayesian perspective, we're going to try to do this based on the predictive distribution of the future data. And again, it should be done under this true model. Okay. Since in the incomplete specification, we know what that true model is, in principle, we can carry out this optimization. All right, in the M-open case, we don't know what the predictive distribution is. Okay. All right, but in the context of model selection, Bernardo and Smith said, well, okay, let's just pretend, since we don't really have the future data, and we only have our observed data, let's partition our observed data. Okay, so we'll let yj here, we'll let that be a proxy for our future observations. And now we'll take all of the other data, so without the jth observation, and that's going to be a proxy for our observed data. Okay, and so we'd have n possible partitions if we divided the data up in this way. Okay, and so, you know, they show this again, strong law of large numbers, that if we have a large sample size and we randomly select k from these partitions, that we can approximate our expected utility by this average. Okay, so here we're going to, again, use the jth observation as a proxy for our future case, and now this will be the action using all the observations without the jth observation. So they tried to motivate the use of cross-validation as a way to approximate expected utility from a Bayesian perspective. Okay, because there's always been this complaint, it's like, how does cross-validation, you know, does it matter to a Bayesian at all? Okay, so if that's the case, what we can do is we can set this up as an optimization problem. We want to find the sets of weights, in this case, a squared error loss, to maximize our expected utility. And we might want to impose some constraints on the weights. Okay. If we just do it in this way, again, we might get negative weights. That might not be such a great idea. So, and our weights don't necessarily normalize to any fixed value. So in trying to make this look like model probabilities, we may impose constrictions such that the weights sum to one and that the weights are all non-negative. Okay. So again, as a constrained optimization problem, we can rephrase this in terms of the Lagrangian. Okay, so we have this again the constraint. Oops, go back. We have this term coming in from as a penalty for the first constraint, and then we have the second constraint coming in here. So one thing I'd like to point out is that these are not priors. Okay, even though it might look like to a Bayesian that you look at the solution, it looks like these might be priors on the weights, they're not. The weights are just part of the decision problem. Okay. But because of the sum to one and the non-negativity, we actually end up with this kind of lasso-like penalty that is going to drive a lot of the weights actually to zero. Okay. So just the last two constraints really force the weights to have the same support as in the posterior model probabilities that would arise in Bayesian model averaging. However, the weights do not have an interpretation as posterior model probabilities. They're just the optimal solution to the decision problem. Okay. So this, again, with the cross-validation as a way of kind of trying to approximate this expected utility, it looks a lot like the solution for stacking. So comments on that. So basically the solution ends up being a function of these kind of cross-validation residuals. With the sum to one constraint alone, the weights are going to be proportional to this E transpose E matrix or the inverse of that. If the residuals from all the models are uncorrelated, then the weights will be proportional to 1 over the mean squared error. So the cross-validation mean squared error for that model. Okay. However, if the models are highly correlated with each other, then without any of the non-negativity constraints, we can get very unstable weights. So we can get models where one weight will be highly positive, the other model, another highly correlated model get things as being very negative. Basically, because of the squared error loss, this is like a regression problem, and we know when we have multicollinearity, we get very unstable solutions. So the non-negativity constraint really regularizes the problem. Okay. So back to our application, we have our five clinical trees we're going to look at four expression trees, four retrospectives of these linear discriminant models. Each of these five has involved Bayesian model averaging in some way to try to find the prediction that we're going to combine. And so what we're going to do is to use this M-open model averaging then to find the weights to combine the predictions from this class of models. Here's just a picture of what happens with the weights in terms of the constraint. The first line up here is what happens if we just impose the sum to one constraint. And the different colors correspond to different classes of the models. So the black lines correspond to the clinical trees, yellow are the expression trees, and the red correspond to these linear discriminant models. And what we find is that with just the sum to one constraint, the trees as constructed have predictions that are very highly correlated with each other. Okay? And these are not random forest trees, these are Bayesian trees, so who knows how what their accuracy is, but anyway. But what we're getting, these trees in particular lead to very highly correlated predictions, and so what we're getting is that the weights are more or less compensating for each other. So a tree with a very high weight, positive weight, is offset by a tree with a really negative weight. Okay. If we impose the non-negativity constraint, then this is what the solution ends up being. You can't see that because this is going from minus 40 to 40. This is just blowing up what the weights are, and what we see is that a number of these end up being driven to zero or very close to zero. Okay. All right, so just to kind of look at kind of a validation experiment, so we did five-fold cross-validation, so we have five splits of the data into two groups. So we have a training group that we're going to use to learn the weights and get the predictions, and then we'll have a real out-of-sample validation set, Y star. Okay. So these are not the cross-validations. These are not used at all in learning the weights. Okay. So using only the training data, we can obtain our weights. We construct the model averaging estimates. We get a probability of long-term survival by doing these combinations of the model averaging predictions with these weights. And then from that, we'll just use a classification rule to determine long-term survivors versus short-term survivors if that probability is greater than 1/2. And then we'll average it over the different validation sets. So these are weights for each of the models, and these are the five different validation sets. And so what we can see is the weights can be very unstable. They change a lot from set to set. They change from, again, model to model. Without this, the non-negativity constraint. Okay. And we find that the accuracy here ranges from like 46 up to 64%. So we get much improved prediction by, again, adding this non-negativity constraint to the solution. And so what we're finding is that, again, a number of the weights are driven to zero. So in some sense, because of the correlation structure, a lot of the clinical trees had correlations in terms of their predictions around like 99%. Okay, so we really don't need all of them. We just need one of them. So the non-negativity constraint picks just one of them. Okay. And the out-of-sample average prediction accuracy is much better with that. Okay, so I guess just to wrap up so we can all go to lunch. In terms of, I guess, what I've tried to present here is from a Bayesian perspective, kind of the formal mechanism for combining models where the marginal likelihoods are not really commensurate. If we try to take tree models and turn them around to try to calculate a marginal likelihood for the random data, the gene expression data, the tree models can end up giving us infinite marginal likelihoods. So from, from the Bayesian perspective of trying to even put that problem into a Bayesian model averaging context where our posterior model probabilities are proportional to the marginal likelihoods of the data, it just can't be done. And so that's what really motivated us to try to look at these other ways of combining models. Okay. So we can think about this as an extension of how to do Bayesian model averaging, but in this M-open framework. The solution, so the combining of models, if we're in the M-closed, the weights are just determined by the posterior model probabilities. in the M-open or the M-complete framework, the weights will depend on what your choice of utility function is. Okay. So while what we've done so far is to look at what happens if we use squared error loss, you could also say, well, I want to maybe use Kullback-Leibler divergence or some other measure or loss function based on the actual predictive distributions. The solution, though, will depend on what your utility function is. The formulation in terms of determining the weights does not take into account complexity of the models, each of the individual models that go into the weights in terms of that formulation. However, one could think of, again, building in another constraint or building in another function to that kind of combination of utility functions that would get at model complexity. Okay. A last point is what we've used is cross-validation to try to approximate these predictive distributions. There are other approaches that we might want to use to try to sample from the predictive distribution for the data. Cross-validation is easy to do in terms of minimizing computations. We probably don't want to fit a full-blown Bayesian non-parametric model to try to get at the predictive distribution for future observations and do that over and over again. So we might want to look at other simpler approaches. The Bayesian bootstrap is another way to try to get at what the predictive distribution would be. And the Bayesian bootstrap actually gives you kind of an analog to what I call Bayesian bagging. And so there may be, again, connections between kind of generalizing the Bayesian bagging and then the combining of weights, similar to like what Jerry was talking about this morning. Okay. Important question is, you know, what really does happen is the number of models in the space, how that increases. Again, the non-negativity constraint really does regularize the problem, and so, again, should end up with a stable solution for that. Okay, well, hopefully everyone can go to lunch.
Thank you, Marlise. We do have time for a question.
Cross-validation is about treatment as you can get.
Right.
You're minimizing squared error loss, and then cross-validating the result, which again is about as frequent as you can get. And I'm missing the Bayesian aspect.
Okay, so the cross-validation was coming in as a way to try to approximate sampling from that predictive distribution. So if we believe all of the data are exchangeable, then the cross-validation is a way to try to get a sample from the predictive distribution for the future observations conditional on our observed data. And so the squared error loss, I mean, so decision theory from a Bayesian perspective, we could always try to find what's the best solution for our particular decision problem. And so that's, if I go way back. So what we're, again, what we're trying to do is to find this expected utility, okay? So in principle, what we need to do is to, so as a predictive distribution, we could represent that as the predictive distribution conditional on a model with some parameters. So Bayesian non-parametric models typically have, they're infinite dimensional, okay? And so kind of the Bayesian bootstrap is an approximation. The cross-validation is trying to get an approximation to this infinite-dimensional predictive distribution. But yeah, the comment on cross-validation coming into a Bayesian solution isn't accepted by everybody in there. And so that's the that's where I'd like to look at better approximations.
The follow-up to this actually, I mean, I think a related question where Bayes, another view of this might be to say, well, if you really believe that the true model is nowhere near close to being in your set of individual models, then make that set bigger and then do a Bayesian, a full Bayesian inference on it, rather than try and spend the Bayesian technology on getting a point outside your small space.
Yeah, I would agree there. So like in terms of what I do in terms of non-parametric regression is to use as large a class of basis functions as possible. And so, and actually in that work, so related to like a support vector machine or kernel regression method, you basically